Yeah.
Yeah, the ducks were at a rave and headed towards the back of a police car. We needed the ducks to be a little bit more in a line.
This is Logic, the short and sweet legal podcast for those of us not in the legal field. The purpose of Logic is to inform, educate, and hopefully, fingers crossed, entertain our listeners. I'm Dana Arnold, Executive Director of the Fayette County Bar Association, and this is Logic.
We are joined by Delora Hughes, Associate Professor of Law, Director of Clinics, and Externship at the University of Kentucky J. David Rosenberg College of Law. Delora, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. I have joined the faculty at UK Law last year, so it's just been about a year now, a little bit over a year. I'm actually originally from here. So I was born and raised in Lexington. My family moved around a bit. I came back here for high school. I was in the first full class at Dunbar.
Paul Lawrence Dunbar.
Yeah. And so I'm excited to be home. I haven't really lived in Kentucky. I've been back every year, right, to visit. But I haven't really lived here since I was 19. So just some background. I've been a public defender and a legal aid lawyer and a judicial clerk and all kinds of things. But it was just really such an amazing opportunity to be given the chance to come back to Lexington to do good work, to serve the community, and to get to do that in your hometown.
Yeah.
So that was just a little too good to turn down.
And your program is really cool, too.
Yeah.
And Allison Connolly, Professor Connolly, used to run the clinic before.
Yes.
And, like, she's great. We love her.
It's good to have a predecessor that is supportive, that built such a great, solid reputation for the program, and now to not only get a chance to continue that good work, but to also build on that foundation, right? And the program has run well. We just celebrated our 25th anniversary last year.
That's
amazing. The students that I've had this year are excited. They jokingly refer to it as Clinic 2.0 because they're excited about being engaged in the building of it and seeing where we can take it. How do we get more students in the program? How do we provide more services to the community? How do we work better in partnership with all of the other great legal organizations that are around the area and around the state?
Right.
And that's the fun part, that sadly the possibilities are rather endless. And so we have a lot of room to be creative and to figure out where we want to go next.
That sounds so fun. Well, my first question is, what is the University of Kentucky Legal Clinic?
Yeah, so the Legal Clinic at its core is it's a course. So the students that sign up are licensed under the Supreme Court rule that allows for limited practice.
Mm-hmm.
So here in Kentucky, that means that they're all third years that
mm-hmm.
have completed a certain number of course credits, and they go through a small application process, and basically for all intents and purposes are practicing under my bar number, which on most days is fine and occasionally is a little scary. But it gives them an opportunity to do some work that they otherwise wouldn't get to do before they graduate, and that's
right.
key. And so this is what we call an experiential course. And experiential means that instead of just sitting listening to lectures, etc., learning the information in that kind of context, they're actually being asked to take that information and put it into practice.
Yes.
So these students in this course, through the course, are representing real people. And so they get academic credit for that. We offer in exchange, we're offering those services out to the people of Kentucky for free. So we do have some income requirements. It's not super hard lines. But overall, our focus is that we're representing people who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford counsel. We don't have any geographic limitations, really, officially. We are able to serve anybody in the Commonwealth. We don't have citizenship requirements. We don't have those things, right? We need people who reside in Kentucky, or at least that their cases,
right,
are happening here in the Commonwealth. So really, we've got a lot of great flexibility. And the way the clinic has been run, and for right now, I'm continuing, is that we focus around civil litigation. So doing some consumer work, some housing work, kind of the broad stuff, car accidents, you know, contract stuff, some family law, divorce, a little bit of adoption, a little bit of custody. Lately, we've been doing some work around name changes and expungements. So, and then, of course, we're always doing just interesting things that pop through the door as folks call us and need help. Or we're also able to really, we have the privilege of being able to find out what students really want to learn. And try and be responsive to that as well. But at the end of the day, our core mission is to educate law students through offering practice through this course. And
that's
by doing
awesome.
That, serving the people of Kentucky.
I remember, and it was 100 years ago. I'm going to totally date myself. But I remember going into my office for the first time and was like, is this a mail machine? This is a fax machine? What is this?
If it makes you feel any better,
how does this work?
They're still doing that, but it's for a different reason.
Yes. Yes, it's not.
They don't necessarily know what a fax machine is, but.
What is this antiquated machine? 1996 called, yeah.
But
I know.
But exactly what you described is what I hope we help students avoid a little bit of. Is
right.
that having those experiences, going to court for the first time, talking to a judge for the first time, speaking to a client, having to listen to somebody's story and know how to be responsive, even if you don't know the answer immediately, right? Handling all of those kinds of things under really close supervision before you go out into the world. Yeah. And also, we want that experience where my job is not to take as many cases as I can possibly take. My job is to make sure we're taking cases that are appropriate for the students to be able to handle, that they can learn something from, and that we're capable of supervising and able to do. But that might mean that some kids are taking 3 cases, and some kids are taking 5, and some kids are taking 10.
Yeah.
But all of that is designed around the notion that long before you walk in the door of a place where your paycheck is determined based on your performance,
correct,
that you have had an opportunity to try these things out. And I think it serves two major missions. And the first is, of course, as always, we want to graduate practice-ready lawyers whenever we can, right? People
right.
who are ready to hit the ground running. But I think for some students, too, it's also an opportunity to try out litigation, to try out direct legal services, to see if that is a glove that fits, right? To
right.
see if that is something that they want to do. And my hope is that even for students that maybe that's not their jam, right? Maybe this is not the thing that's their passion or whatever. But my hope is that they realize, A, that they can do more than they think they can when they first come in. And I also hope that what it does is exposes them to the need, that there is a really great legal need in the community, and so that even if they are going to go be big law lawyers, or maybe even they're not going to necessarily practice, maybe they're going to consult, or they're going to do whatever, that they are aware of that need enough that they feel motivated to do something about it. And maybe that's that in their practice they join Central Kentucky Lawyer Referral. Maybe it's that they volunteer as a pro bono lawyer for legal aid. Maybe it's that they honestly just do some small legal work for their church, like whatever it is, that through some of the work we do, we expose them to not only the need, but empower them to realize that they have the ability to step in and help, that they don't have to sit on the sidelines. So my hope is that all of our students, I'm not going to turn every single one of them into legal aid lawyers, that's not my job, nor is it my goal, but that what we do is make them better citizens of the world, so that they go out with some new notions and new ideas and some new skills. And what they want to do is actually be involved.
And to ground them.
Absolutely.
You know, like, there are people who need help.
Well, it's not all appellate briefs and, you know, we learn a lot of law through appellate cases. And I think the students really benefit a lot from seeing how much goes into and happens long before the Supreme Court ever hears a case. Or long before even the Kentucky Supreme Court hears case, that there are years and years of struggle to even get into court or to trial, and then through all those first few stages. And I think the work that we're doing, students really see not only the realities of access to justice on the ground, but also the realities of trying to run a law practice. And you might want to take everybody who walks through the door, but the reality is that
you
also have to pay your own salary
and
keep a roof over your head and support your family. And that means that you're going to have to make some choices about who's paying and how much they're paying and all of those pieces. And I think we, even when we don't intentionally set out for those to be the lessons, those lessons crop up very naturally in the flow of what we do. And because we partner with, you know, Fayette County Bar, we partner with Legal Aid, we partner with Kentucky Youth Law Project, and on down the list, Kentucky, you know, Refugee Ministries, etc. The students are also seeing a wide variety of ways to practice. They're seeing and meeting co-counsel in a number of ways. So I think there's just a lot of exposure really important. And, you know, look, experiential learning, we call it a three-legged stool. You've got clinics, which is them doing live client work through the comfort level of the law school, really controlling the cases and having a professor supervise. You've got externships where the kids are out in the field doing this work under the supervision of experienced lawyers. And they're really seeing, I like to call it immersion, right? They're really seeing what it's like to be that kind of lawyer every day.
Right.
And then you've got simulation courses. And we have a number of faculty as well as, you know, full-time faculty as well as adjunct faculty teaching students through hypothetical means, right? Doing simulations, negotiation, mediation classes, advocacy classes in some way. So I think all of those things together are really what helps us get students
really
ready. Yeah, to walk out the door. And, you know, my hope is, as always, that what everybody realizes is that those classes really build on what they are learning from my doctrinal colleagues, right? You're not going to be able to do some of this work if you didn't pay attention in crim pro and you didn't pay attention in evidence, right? You're going to have to catch
you
up.
To know.
Yeah, you need con law, you need contracts, you know, you need that legal writing class that you took in first year. So we spend a lot of time flashing students back to that knowledge and those experiences. And I think, if nothing else, we also encourage them about when is a topic too much. It's too much that we don't know, that we either can't do it or we need help. And how far can we go down that we need to learn it as we go kind of road.
Right.
And so I feel very lucky that the legal community here has been really welcoming and supportive, because I, you know, I'm licensed in a lot of places, but I have to learn, I had to learn Kentucky too. And so I've been very lucky, I think, and blessed to have a number of folks that have stepped up and said, we'll co-counsel on that family law case, or we're excited about doing this kind of project. Can the students work with us on doing that? Or, you know, it's just been, everybody has been very supportive and welcoming. The courts, I think, have all been welcoming. We've not had anybody push back on the students making appearances.
Oh, that's great.
In front of them.
So
and there's
glad.
Just really not much cooler as a law professor than getting to be there with the students, standing by the student's side when they make that very first court appearance, and the judge tells them, like, we did an appearance on a posthumous paternity case not too long ago, which kind of interesting and super fun. And I have made this poor child go through probably 17 drafts of this of this motion, right? And all necessary edits and back and forth, and what do you think about this? And you make that change, and that begets another change, and there's a better way to write this, and whatever. And she went with me. Student went with me all the way to the end. I mean, you know, as one does, a little complaining as we go about really again. Yes, again. And we stood in that courtroom, and the court granted that motion and said, this was a persuasive and well-written document enough that I do not need to hear oral argument, but I'm happy to hear anything that you might want to share. And that student, watching her beam, it's all her work. I did editing, I did suggestions, but it was all her work. And there is nothing cooler than getting to see that student, and in this case, a student who not have any other lawyers in her family, first gen, really huge. This was huge for her.
Oh.
So not only to get to be there and see that in support, but also, quite honestly, it gives me good faith in our
validation system.
Yes, and what we're doing, and also that that judges are seeing what great work our students are capable of. Seeing them even before they become barred, that these are going to be the next generation of lawyers that walk through the door, and that they're ready, right?
Yes.
They're ready. And I think, for me at least, I like that when the courts have seen our students and are complimenting the work they're doing, they see how they're handling their clients, that letting the student know you're building that reputation from the minute you walk through the door.
Yes.
And so it's not that we don't ever make mistakes. We do. We had a fun one not too long ago where the client had sworn to us, this is how you spell my name, and then we got in front of court, and the court did exactly what they should do. She asked, is this how you spell it? And then the client was like, no. Oh, my God. And I'm dying. I'm sure I am 9 colors of red. The student is looking at me like, what to do? And we're having this moment of, you know what, it is not about not necessarily ever making mistakes. It's about how we handle those mistakes.
Correct.
And making sure in that moment was it most important that the court had the right information, that the client did not suddenly feel nervous that it was all going to fall apart because they were having to correct something.
Yeah.
And then the student actually being respectful of the judge. It would have been very easy in that moment for the student to have sort of thrown the client under the bus and say, I did not make that mistake, Your Honor. And the student did not do that. That wasn't an instinct at all.
Oh.
And it was great.
That's wonderful.
So I think not having perfection be our goal, having work your hardest, do your best, and for the students really getting comfortable doing this kind of work so that they can handle those moments, right, when they pop up.
When they come up in real life, and
because they will.
Your professor's not there, or your judge isn't as, you know, judges are people too.
As welcoming, like somebody had a bad day.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, I do think we get a lot of, you know, people are aware, obviously, that they're students, and I'm sure there's a little give there just, you know.
Right, right.
Because the expectations would be less for somebody who's not
this
far.
It's kind of like when you see the little sign on a car, it's like student driver. You're just like, okay, thank you for putting that in yellow.
It has not occurred to me, but maybe I should put a bumper sticker on them. But I will say, for the most part, I'd say 9 times out of 10, I've been doing this now for almost 15 years, and 9 times out of 10, if it was not for me being somewhere nearby, I don't know that you would ever pick up on that these are third-year law students versus...
Right.
You know, second, third year associates somewhere.
Yeah.
And for the most part, you know, I think what we like to, we always make sure the clients know. So one question people might have is who's doing the lawyering, right? Who's actually doing the lawyering? And the bottom line is the students are sitting first chair. So nothing is going out without, you know, me or another lawyer that's working with us seeing it. But the students really are doing the heavy lifting. And one of the things that's great about that is that they have more time. I'm not giving them a full caseload. I mean, my caseload as a public defender or a legal aid lawyer back in the day was out of control.
Wild.
So we're not giving them that. I'm giving them enough where they're learning things and they're feeling challenged, but not over the top.
Right.
And so that means they have more time for each client, and they have more time for looking at documents because they're trying to do it slowly. And I think that in clinical education, we think about that as giving a best practice, right? We're teaching a best practice. And it's not because in real life, legal practice, you can always do the best version. You can't. You're not going to have the time. But when you're making decisions about what to cut, you're making decisions about taking a shortcut or a side or not doing something, you need to know what ideal is so that you can gauge what it is okay to cut and still be within your professional obligations, your ethical obligations, and still doing what you need to do for your client. And so I think slowing it down pretty far for the students where they feel enough pressure from the fact that it's a real client.
That it's a real, yes, it's a real thing. Like, you're an attorney for a real person.
Yes, and my job is to make sure that my editing, my feedback, my whatever, as much as it can be, is happening behind the scenes. So that the student, so that clients are not looking to me, that courts are not looking to me, that everybody is looking to the student, and then it is the student's responsibility to check in with me. Now, I'm observing, I'm never further, you know, I always joke, it used to be that, what's the gong show, right?
Yes.
Where you're just close
right
enough that they can hook you.
Yes,
right?
yes.
The big giant hook out and pull you off the stage. I'm always close enough to do that, right? And I'm listening and I'm paying attention, but it puts me backseat. So the student is really first chair, doing all that work, doing the research, and then they also have each other in support. So I think it's one of the best parts of it is listening to the students in our clinic space go, hey, didn't you have one of these already? And listening to them teach each other, which I also think is, again, just
important.
Such the perfect setup for law practice, which is we so much think that we have to know everything and we don't. You need mentors. You need sponsors. But none of us are going this alone, right? Because why would you reinvent the wheel? Go find a sample motion. Go find somebody to tell you what the heck that statute that's got 17 words where it could have done with 5 actually means.
Yes.
You know, and I think giving them permission to do that, which is also very different than we do in a lot of other classes throughout their educational careers, right? Where it's, you know, you've got your
graded
on you.
This is what it needs to be.
Exactly.
Yes.
I think the idea here is that I'm hopeful that they feel comfortable saying that they don't know something. I encourage them explicitly. If a client asks you something and you don't know the answer, it is very powerful to tell somebody, I don't know, but I'm going to get back to you.
But I will find out.
I'm going to find out. I'm going to come back to you. I would so much rather them do that than make stuff up.
Yes.
And that way you're building trust. So you've taken an opportunity. Nobody's going to judge you for not knowing everything, but they will judge you for being wrong.
For lying.
And they will judge you for misleading them, right? Yeah. Nobody lets know it all. So practicing that, it's hard for them to say, I don't know, right? Their whole instinct is that we're supposed to be experts in all the things. So I think that's good. And then again, I just want them to also learn for the kids who are maybe doing more of the mentoring, maybe they come in with more legal experience than some of the other students or whatever. Learning how to mentor somebody in the law is a huge skill too.
Yeah.
And I remind them fairly regularly, I hope often enough, that these are also their first colleagues. And so I still send. I can tell you who was in my clinic in law mm-hmm. school. I can tell you who in law school I would not send people to.
Yeah.
Not live people. not live clients.
But them walking ones.
Yeah, and they know. Like, you know, I think a few of them at graduation, we were giving a clinic student award. The Clinical Legal Education Association allows us to honor a student that's excellence in clinical and an excellent in externships. And we were honoring this last year. This is the first time we've given that award, and we gave it to Rachel Beller, who's wonderful. Really came to us with no real experience. And one of the comments that multiple students made about her is how free she was with her knowledge and the sharing, and that the way in which she shared and imparted information with her classmates was not one of talking down to them or treating them lesser in any way for not knowing.
Or like, you're supposed to know this.
But taking it as a compliment that they asked her the question, and multiple people sort of commented on her openness and her sharing. And not only do I love that, and I think it's super fun, but I would assume, I hope, that that is something that she carries with her.
Right? Yes.
Moving forward.
Absolutely.
And when she thinks about whether she's going to take on that student, that brand new lawyer as a mentee, right, or that recent grad or whomever, I hope that means that she feels more equipped
to do that.
And
to take the lead on that.
Exactly. Yeah. And that the other students might do it down the road because they realize the value and the power of it. I think there's a number of ways at the law school that we do that. Obviously, this is just the way that I have the privilege of being able to have first chair access to.
So what types of cases does the clinic typically handle? I think we,
Civil lit broadly, which is a lot of things. Generally speaking, I'd say, you know, we are in partnership with Legal Aid to take a good number of the expungements. They do a lot of really wonderful expungement clinics through with Goodwill Industries throughout the community. We take a lot of those cases from them, take a lot of divorce cases from them. And then the stuff that's just walking in the door. So one of our favorite clients from last year, who has permission to share his name, is Mr. Buster. He did some Googling. He got in a car in an accident with his truck, and he was not at fault at all, but it was just damage to the vehicle. There was no physical injury, just property
damage, which is different.
But more than small claims.
Than injury, yep.
Yeah, and so really no law firm was going to take that. You understand why. And one of the firms he went to suggested the clinic. So we took him on. The irony now of how that turned out is, of course, the student. One of the things we really do have the privilege is to talk about justice and what that means to people and the concept of justice. And every student, of course, as they should, has a different definition of what that looks like. And that might change by the client, right? Justice is not a monolith, right?
Right.
And one of the things that was super fun with Mr. Buster was it started as what felt like was, you know, best laid plans. Well, this should be fairly straightforward, right? Like, he's clearly not at fault. The police report indicates that he's not at fault. The insurance company just needs a lawyer to call Mr. Buster. They'd already denied him. The insurance company just needs, you know, somebody fancy, quote unquote, to call and say, do what you need to do. We'll get him a check. We'll fix the truck. Yeah, and we all know that that is not how that went. You need the narrator, and that is not how the story went, friends.
No.
And so midway through that, now the student is realizing, okay, I wasn't super excited about the fact that you denied him the first time, but okay, great, whatever. Like, we understand you're a corporation. You got to do your due diligence and
right.
fine. But now it's been X number of months, and the truck is not fixed, and that is not cool, and he's having to drive back and forth and do this and do that and all of these pieces. And so her definition of the student's definition of justice for that case turned out to be one of just getting the man's truck fixed and doing, you owe him for the time and energy that it has
taken.
And quite honestly, the lawyer's fees, because we did a crap ton of work to make this happen. And so, which we obviously did not take. We always But it was interesting watching her. And so the case that a law firm would not take because there was not going to be any money in it for them, not only did we get the property damage covered, but the student got multiple thousand dollars for him in addition to cover that time, right? So that is not usual. And I think that firm was well within their place to say this is not something that we can actually spend time on in a for-profit business. But it is the beauty of what we get to do, and
what you could really do for a client that in any other scenario would have been underserved.
Yeah, and honestly, look, we could have also said no and not fought that additional battle and gone on to represent a different client, but part of what we're trying to accomplish, because it is a law school course still, is really getting the student to see all sides of that battle. And I really do feel like, you know, not only are the students learning all the things they should be learning, but we're still managing to give really high quality legal representation while we do it.
Yeah.
And that is a privilege to do so. And it's particularly funny for that student. She actually had been working at a different law firm at the time, but she had told people about her case that she was excited about. And they're like, you're never going to get any more. You're going to get lucky if they give you the property. She took a copy of the check to work with her.
Look.
Weeks later, was like, victory. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
yay.
But, right, it matters. And, you know, same thing. It matters to them. I think those small victories matter. It 100%, of course, matters to the client. And there is, and I should say, just because, you know, welcome to lawyer advertising, we should say, nothing I'm saying should indicate to anybody that we can win every single one. We do not win every single one.
Right.
But there are lessons to be learned from the losing. And there are, you know, when I interviewed at the public defender's office once, and they asked me what I thought was most important about that kind of work. And I'm like, I think you, in order to survive here, I think you have to redefine your definition of success. And your definition of success in every single case is not guilty.
Yes.
Sometimes it might be winning outright, and other times it might be that the punishment is less, or the punishment is similar, but it fits better with what the client needs. And I feel like here a lot of what the students get, and they get it from the victories, but they get it just as much from the times in which we are not successful, is the value of people being heard and seen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the main thing we're doing there is I hope that all of our clients leave feeling like their student really gave something specific and individual,
regardless
to
of
them.
The outcome.
Absolutely. And they got as quality, maybe sometimes even better, representation than they might find on the private market.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, my predecessor certainly prided herself on that, and that is certainly something that I hope to, that we are meeting and continue in the future. And if last year's students and client response is any indication, we are still doing a good job in doing that.
I did want to ask you too, because you know, we've had clients call the lawyer referral service, and then we have sent them to the clinic. Are you guys only, like, taking cases during the semester, or, like, in the summertime if someone calls, do I say wait until the fall? Or?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a really great question. So you are right that because we are a course, we primarily run in the fall and the spring. We are able some semesters to offer the clinic in the summer. I did not do so this summer because this is my first summer really here.
Right, right. Got to figure it out. Like,
yeah, we need to get our ducks.
Let's, yeah.
Yeah, the ducks were at a rave and headed towards the back of a police car. We needed the ducks to be a little bit more in a line.
That's right.
But in future, so I think two things I'll say. Just because we're not running classes doesn't mean we don't necessarily have some students present who are doing some work. So the thing to do, so there's two ways to kind of get legal services from the clinic. And the first is that folks can just call. And what will happen is if we don't have students or we don't have bandwidth to take on additional things, we will always share that and be honest with people, like about where you are on the wait list, what kind of that time frame looks like. Or if it is like this summer when people are calling at the end of June and we're like, this is not an emergency and we really don't have anybody to do this, can you wait until then? We do two things. We usually give them other numbers and say, feel free to go try and find other services. And if you don't, we will be checking back with you at the beginning of the semester. So I would say to anybody who's thinking about sending, whether it's through lawyer referral or wherever, sending cases to us, we'd rather just have people call. So two ways to get to us would be, the first is just the phone number itself, which is you should get to my assistant, which is 859-257-4692. People can also email legalclinic, all one word, at uky.edu. We are working, that will also get you to, I can see that email, as can, and I say assistant, but she's really our sort of all-round office manager, keep the ducks in a row. Lily Bramley is her name. She's lovely and wonderful. One of us will get back to folks. We are working right now on kind of creating a more online access request for legal services form. I think our worry a little bit is when people can fill that online, we don't want anybody to fall through the cracks. So when we do that intake over the phone with you, or if you email us, generally we're going to call you back. That means we get that personal touch right from the beginning.
Right.
And it also means
the service does that too.
Yes.
Like, it's not you just go there and say, I have a bankruptcy thing and I need... Like, sometimes people don't know what type of attorney they
need. Most people are not walking in the door and saying, I have a property law issue related to the following statute, right?
Yes.
That would be lovely.
Wouldn't it?
So you need to ask follow-up questions. And mm-hmm. so I think we're trying to do that piece, right? We're trying to get better information, whether it's for us to help them or to get them to the right places. So I think we're a little torn on that right now. And right
yeah.
now, so far, we have been able to handle the volume of folks coming in. We've devised some internal systems, I think, to streamline that a little bit better as people call.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for now, like I said, make the call. We'll let you know where we're at, honestly, or send an email giving us a little bit more information about what you need, but you will get a call back.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a big part of that is also just because, again, our job is to teach the law students amidst the legal practice experience, is that the students do intake too. So you may very well call. If you call on a Monday at 11 o'clock, it is very likely that one of the law students is going to answer the phone. And it is a learning experience for them
yeah.
to take an intake. So it's somebody that we don't know who might very well be really struggling with it. They do not feel listened to. They have not been heard. They can't get to court. Or
this is the 700th number they've called.
Exactly. They don't even know anymore whether
mm-hmm.
it's us or y'all or
mm-hmm.
Legal Aid or whatever. And so that is a part of the learning for the students. So the students are actually assigned a subset of office hours every week that they're doing in the clinic. And for better or worse, they have to answer the phone while
yeah.
they're in there. I think the actual answering of the phone is the struggle more than
then,
whatever's being talked
yes.
about. They are not; these are not generations
yes.
of students
no.
that are phone people.
Mm-mm.
But that's good. This is a good place for them to
yeah.
practice that and overcome that. And I think after a while, the students realize, and we talk through skills, that they get better at that throughout the semester, and they get more comfortable. So again, when you call, you might get Lily, you might get me, but somebody's either going to answer the phone or get back to you, but you also might get a third-year law student who's learning. And they identify themselves as that, like, I'm a student in the clinic. Yeah, and I think...
I have to call and, like, I'll have to be, like,
yeah.
one of those... What are they?
Secret shoppers.
Secret shoppers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a secret client.
You'll have to do that. Yeah,
but it is. I've called a couple of times, though, and they're not realizing that it's my phone number that's popped up. And I have not faked being a client yet, but I have listened to how they're answering the phone.
Yeah.
And so then we have conversations about we don't just say hello. We do
yeah.
say,
this
legal clinic,
yes,
how can I help you?
Yes.
Or whatever. And again, phone etiquette, right?
Well,
it's,
I mean,
still
even for the service. Even for the service, you know, when I've hired people, because we're a phone service.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I'll just call and be some random person that got fired because they took a gun to work.
Yeah.
That's just
No, it's good to do. And I think that phone etiquette, we think about some of that stuff as soft skills, right?
But right.
those skills are just as important as the lawyering skills. And if some of these students are going to end up, you know, in private practice
mm-hmm.
or in small firms, they are going to be the people who are recruiting clients, who are recruiting, you know, new colleagues, who are out at bar association meetings, they're giving CLEs, they're doing all these things. We need to be practiced
yes.
In these skills. And also, whether we like it or not, every single one of us works in multi-generational environments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether
yes.
it's through the bar association, through, you know, your volunteer work, through whatever it is, or your work itself. And so it's good to get that practice for them, right?
It is.
And to think through, is texting appropriate here? Do I need to email? Is a phone call really, would that get me there faster? How is it best for me to do this and to document what I'm doing? So there are often times where I think the students are doing pieces that they recognize helps the practice, and they don't even necessarily realize that they are
learning
and doing an assignment in the same way they
yeah.
would be in any class.
Yes.
So we
Absolutely.
Like when the learning happens without acknowledging
yes.
the learning. It's kind of like getting exercise without feeling it's exercise. That's usually the best kind.
Right. Yes. Like when your watch says, do you want me to record this as a workout? Yes, please.
Yes.
Okay. So we answered that if it was only during the semester, which it's not. Is there financial parameters that the client would have to meet to be eligible?
Yeah, so we don't have requirements exactly the same way as like Legal Aid or an other LSC, Legal Services Corporation funded org might. Like I said earlier, our main limitation is we're supposed to be representing people who otherwise can't afford counsel, but that's
right.
a really broad standard. We do check with folks about their income. So I would say yes, we do have income eligibility things. We are, you know, folks who are
bringing in six figures are not the folks we're really designed to represent. But I think we all also, and I think the state bar recognizes this, et cetera, that the just because people are working full time does not necessarily mean that they can afford counsel. And we have a huge gap in the center that is, we have a lot, we don't meet the need, but we have legal services available for folks that are very much at the bottom of that income level. But we really miss some of the middle. And so we try and find ways to get those folks in too, especially in the areas where there's not a lot of pro bono services available, or there's not good do-it-yourself information, or things that are not going to be at the self-help center or on their list, right? Or,
well, and that, the self-help and all that, although they're wonderful, but they're kind of new.
They are new, and I think people are still learning, so that's part of it for us is if we can get people to those fabulous services, you know, Glenda and Sylvia and all those folks that are running that program are amazing. If we can get people to those services and they're useful for them, great. That means we're free to help somebody else in some other arena. So, yeah, just trying to maximize all of the opportunities. But I would say, yes, so probably we're looking initially at sort of that income. We also are prioritizing people that way, too. So folks that have sort of an imminent issue, right, maybe there is an older person who is on a limited or no income, who does not have a retirement account to rely on, is really living off Social Security, and is older and does not have a will, or doesn't have power of attorney documents or living wills. Absolutely, we're going to prioritize that over something that probably, you know, that we feel like can wait a little bit, or somebody that's maybe with a little bit of time can have access to another service.
So there's like a triage.
Yeah. So we do some initial triage, and then also we're not always able to know what's going on in the big picture and get it right. But for the most part, students can move through some of the cases fairly quickly enough to, like I said, most everybody's walking out the door with at least four cases that they've handled or touched on in some way. The cases that maybe in the fall don't finalize get handed over to the kids in the spring. And so those kids, and sometimes the kids in the fall, are picking up work that another lawyer has done, which is also a good lesson, right? And thinking about you doing your own casework in such a way that if somebody else
had
your
to come
file,
up, yes.
that they know how to do it, right? So you're not just devastated and embarrassed. Which was one of the things actually for like our student that we gave the clinic award to. It's one of the things that was on the list is everybody that got one of her files was like,
"That's done.
This is ready to rock and roll." And that matters. It matters.
It does.
And what I try to tell the students a lot is that is how you establish a reputation. Mm-hmm. Right? And not that everybody else walking out the door was bad or wrong or anything else, but her stuff stood out as you knew if you got one of her things that you know, it might not be done, but the details were there and it was in a good order and it made sense and there was logic to it. And I think all of that conveys as being thoughtful. She was being thoughtful about the lawyer that would come
in the future,
her.
Yeah.
And thoughtful for the client too.
Yes.
It made that representation better. So I, again, every kid, every time they touch a case, they are either closing it or transferring it. Students in the spring are taking on cases from the students in the fall if they don't complete. We can have work study students. I spent part of the summer finishing up things that just didn't wrap in the spring, but maybe weren't significant enough that they needed to start fresh with a whole other student. I also just want to be mindful that the clients, if they started in the fall, they've had one student, they transferred to the spring, they know who I am. It's one thing to finish out with me. It's another thing to give them a third student.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we try not to do that if we can avoid it. And then, you know, we're also taking on stuff. You know, I have spent the year also trying to, how we met, right, getting to know people that are in community with us and do this work and figure out where the partnerships are. So, you know, some of that has entailed that having the ability to learn and get more information from folks about what we consider aspirational law changes, policy reform, those pieces. And so figuring out where some of those bigger picture things are that the clinic could be helpful, that students might want to write white papers on or have a meeting with a legislator and have a conversation with a legislator about, hey, we would really love, this is something I'd love for you to consider this as maybe a bill or a rule change or whatever. Those are great experiences for the students. Hopeful that we can do more of that work. And then touching on really random things that walk through the door. Like, we had a guy come in with a restoration of voting rights case.
Hey.
And it's not a ton of lawyering by any means. You can do those applications without a lawyer. But the student really felt that they could do some persuasive writing on behalf of the client. It's a guy whose only crime was 27 years ago, out of state, has not even so much as a parking ticket in the time that he's been, in the 27 years that he has been in Kentucky. And his comment to us was, I did my time. I paid the restitution. I did all the things I was supposed to do. I have lived a clean life. Every election season, I am reminded of this, the worst thing that I've ever done.
Yeah.
And that I am not able to be a full and complete citizen or member of my community because I can't vote. So we worked with him to apply under some of the great policies and stuff that Bashir put in place to allow people to apply for their voting rights to be restored. So he is the perfect example of who that fits. He's not an automatic.
Right.
He's not an automatic restoration. He requires a separate application. So we're hopeful. So that application sits on the governor's desk, and we are hopeful that the student's work will result in ultimately getting his voting rights back. But it was good for the student, I think, and quite frankly for me, to be reminded how easy it is for a lot of us to take some of those things for granted.
Granted, yes.
Something I do that sometimes I'm even annoyed that I have to go do, but I'm going to do it, right?
Like, if there's going to be a line.
Exactly. I should have forgot my sticker.
Yes,
like,
where is my swag?
But to this person, it means the final step in their return to being fully, in the way he has defined it, to being a full person.
Yeah,
being
restored
fully human.
To
full rights and access
yes.
to our community. And so I volunteer for and I serve on a committee for the League of Women Voters about restoration of voting rights. And I've shared that story, and that group of folks has a few people on it who have this as their lived experience too.
Wow.
Right? Which is super great. And I'm glad that the League really puts forward people who this impacts directly, right? We're not just talking out of the sides of our mouth about all this stuff. So yeah, I am ever so hopeful. I know that there are more people sitting than just this one gentleman waiting.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that we're thoughtful about
yes.
that. I hope that the governor gets to that. I know there are a lot of really important things to be done in the world, but it matters. And it matters that if we are going to put out there that this is a good policy and we support it and the governor's office backs it, we're going to allow people to apply, we owe them the review. We owe them the time to review their applications and make decisions one way or the other, or let them know, yes to this, but now is not the time, and here's what we need from you, or you need a few more years, or whatever the response needs to be. But yes, I'm hopeful that the students will, that we will find some ways in partnership with the League and with others. The expungement clinics that we participate in are the first step for some of these folks in the restoration of voting rights process, right? So I'm hopeful that all of that kind of, I don't know, I like
it. Kind of like domino effect
the
there.
The word I love is
like,
synergy. I hate that word. I know it's such an awful word, but it does apply here, which is so annoying. But that there's just a lot of good pieces that play together well, that like you said, you push the one domino right and it knocks the next down.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think when we talked about citizenship of the world, that the students are seeing people who recognize, whether it be through expungements or through restoration of voting rights, that they see folks who are really have turned that new leaf, that are doing the things that we say that we want them to do in the justice system,
and aren't judged by the worst thing that they've done
for the rest of their lives. No,
you know,
and also in a time, I guess I would say too, in a time where we struggle to get people to turn out to vote.
Yeah,
I am working with people. My students are working with people. The League is hearing from people that all they want to do is vote.
Yes.
And I feel like that should be acknowledged, that we have the majority of our citizenry does not exercise the right that they are given. And so if we have people who are asking,
really
want to do it and be a part of that, that we should acknowledge it. And I feel like Bashir's campaign promises and his work in that has been very supportive of that notion. So I'm just hopeful that they review those applications and we take those next steps. But you know, we are still better than some places where we don't even have
that. Let me know when that, maybe we'll do a little follow-up podcast.
And look, there are some great, Representative Moser, some other folks really put in some bills in the last, through the last legislative session, working on expungements and those pieces. So there are really wonderful and amazing people working on and thinking about these issues. and trying to figure out how we do right by our fellow citizens, and also are still mindful of that we have rules and laws in place for a reason, and that we do this for the folks that have really demonstrated that all this has come together for them. And so I'm grateful that folks are still interested in it and thinking about it. And this to me is one of those areas where there is a combination of, you know, legislative advocacy, policy reform, boots on the ground, legal work, all stuff that really are just amazing clinical work for our students to jump into. So like I said, very early on, it's just the possibilities are endless. I will also put in a plug in just to say quickly that, you know, it's not like we have one of the, you know, renowned experts in election law sitting in our building.
Yeah,
and Josh
it's not
Douglas.
Like
I
that
mean,
at all.
Really, it's not like that. So you know, and again, same thing. It's not just me in the clinic. It is the students getting excited about these issues because they're also sitting in Josh Douglas's election law class and getting engaged and interested and feeling like, I got to take this somewhere. Where can I go with it? We want to have them have opportunities to apply what they've learned and got excited about. And also that, you know, his work speaks a lot to policy reform and change and redistricting and all of these pieces.
Yes.
That is exactly what we want, is we don't have to agree with the outcomes that all of the students are suggesting or that they might personally prefer or that Professor Douglas suggests or whatever. What we want them is doing the critical analysis,
right,
of what it is versus what they think it should be. And then we want them taking action and being active in the community, right? We want active
to make
citizens.
That.
Absolutely. So that's what I'm hopeful about, if nothing else. They're getting exposure. They're getting activated in some way, shape, or form about this stuff. And then they can go out in the world and do it however they think is appropriate.
Right.
So
critical thinking.
Exactly. And volunteering, right, of service. And that I don't personally think there is not a single area of law, for the most part, that you could go into that there's not some way that you could find to give back, to be of service, to be a sponsor, a mentor, a pro bono lawyer, something.
Yes.
So I think there's not a single student going any kind of work that we couldn't work with them to find
a way
partners and support to give back in whatever they want. So I'm hoping that that's in part what we're aspiring a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think like Dean Murphy, Danny Murphy, who runs our pro bono program, I know, right, that's another way that students can be of service while they are at the law school. And that exposure, same thing, right? What's the need? How can we help fill it and meet it? And then there is no reason for that to stop just because you have graduated from our hallowed halls.
Right.
Right,
it's inspiring.
Lifelong learning.
This is the expectation, and it supports the Supreme Court rule.
Yeah.
And
well, it's a life of service, right?
Yeah.
And so how and the beauty is that everybody can do that in some way that speaks to them.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be daunting. You don't have to learn something new. Like, there's value in what you know and what you can do to help someone else. Like. Yeah,
absolutely.
That's great.
And on the other side of that coin is, if you want to learn something new, then, you know, go to a CLE sponsored by Legal Aid of Bluegrass and learn how to do a new thing. Let them connect you with a more senior attorney who knows how to do those things. Learn it, and then
the next case you can
take on your own.
You're done.
Right? So I think, again, encouraging any of that. Critical analysis, lifelong learning, and lives of service are really where it's at.
All right, I think we really talked about, like, how one gets access, which is the phone number, 859-257-4692.
Perfect.
Also online, you can email legalclinic.uky.edu, I think is what you told me.
Yes, ma'am.
And we will put I will put links to that in the show notes. So you could go to our webpage, www.fcba.com. Click on the Central Kentucky Lawyer Referral Service button, and then all of our podcasts are listed there. Plus, we're on every major streaming platform. I think we've talked about how the clinic is promoting access to justice in Kentucky through your attorneys, through the clients that you help.
You know, we are doing, on that note, we are doing community assessment and figuring out and talking with our partners about where we can help fill in needs. So thinking about where we're not doing duplicative work or work that anybody else really wants to stay focused on, but trying to find spaces where we can help fill in gaps. The clinic itself is not going to be the solution to any of these legal problems for the most part. We are it's too small. The students are still learning. It's in process, and we have a different number and a small subset of bodies every semester to do this work. But what we can do is do some work in response to the needs. So part of my job and, you know, what I got hired to do was to expand the clinical program. So we are working with my colleagues, with my dean, with Dean Davis to figure out, you know, where do we need to go next?
Mm-hmm.
And where can we both meet the goals of educating the students and serving the community? So we're looking into what those next topics
steps
will
are.
Be. Yeah. And it takes a little bit of time, right? That's to get those assessments done. And also sometimes there are things that's not for clinic. Maybe that's a new pro bono project, or maybe that's a different kind of class, or maybe that's just not something that fits at the law school. It fits somewhere else. But I think right now I have been in that phase for the first academic year while I've been here. We'll continue to work on those things and see where we go. And we learn a lot from folks calling. So even if folks think that that maybe we're not, you know, maybe this is not a topic, we'll let you know if it's not the kind of case we can handle. But it's also
somebody will let you know.
Somebody will let you know. Yeah, we are not shy about that. But we are. But it is helpful to get calls, and we are using the data when people call in to let us know. We can communicate that. Like, we're getting a lot of calls about custody matters. We're getting a lot of calls about small business setup. We're getting a lot of calls about X. That information is important. And we, of course, want to make sure that we have good data about that to then share with our legal partners in the community to say, hey, we're seeing a lot more of this. And sometimes
everyone's calling about this.
Yeah, and sometimes that's in response to somebody quits.
Yeah.
And an agency loses a body, or somebody retires, or there's been a change in the law, and suddenly that allows for a lot more people to take advantage of a particular subset of rules. Who knows?
Yeah.
But seeing those patterns are really important. So that's probably, if you have called the clinic in the past or sent somebody to the clinic in the past, you will note that we are taking far more information and data in an intake than we probably would have in years past. And that is because we are making it a point to see, can we see patterns in the zip code where people are calling from, like what county, in addition to types of cases and all of those good kinds of things.
So do you guys travel to other counties to represent?
And we have. So like I said, we don't have a geographic limitation officially.
Right.
At least for now. If we got particular types of funding, then, you know, maybe that might limit us, right? But the University of Kentucky is a land-grant institution, and so our job as a university is to serve the people of Kentucky. Now, with that said, we have to be mindful. I've got students who are taking classes and have families and would like to be home for dinner. So we try and be responsible about, you know, I can take, and also I joked when I first got here that, you know, it's a goal if we're going to represent people in all counties. And then I think my Kentucky civics knowledge kicked in. I'm like, what do you mean there's 120 of them? That's a lot of counties.
It is.
That was a good idea.
It is.
So I was feeling pretty solid about the 14 or 15 I hit in the first year until I did the math. And then realized that, oh, crap.
Yes.
But with that said, some things we're able to handle that are, you know, there's one court appearance. We can set that date far out and we can prep for that. You know, one of the things we've been working on is with is interdisciplinary work with the other departments on campus. So a good example is that we've been working with the Spanish department to get things, undergrad department, division of Spanish, to get things translated so that our materials are available to folks in a variety of, at least
That's
in Spanish
awesome.
To start. So developing that partnership. Another one is actually with Extension Services.
Mm-hmm.
And Extension Services, which is in the Department of Agriculture, already is doing this amazing job of being representative around the state. So they have, I'm going to say outpost, which is probably not a word that they would prefer.
Yes, but I know what you mean.
They have extension offices.
Extension offices everywhere.
Kind of everywhere. And they're in different all the different regions. Those folks are boots on the ground. They get to know their communities. They are trusted advisors and resources. So they were an obvious thing to me to reach out to and say, hey, if I have a client in Ashland, is there a space that we could use, right? Could they come into an extension office or a local space and get on a computer and have access to Zoom to talk to their lawyer here in Fayette County? So they have been phenomenally welcoming
and
super wonderful. I just met with a huge group of their representatives from different regions to think. Actually, with that last one was all Fayette County, because we're looking at some Fayette County funding, mm-hmm. and thinking, what could we do in partnership? And then part of that idea was, what could we do in partnership in Fayette County that we might then be able to use that we have funded to apply to the other regions?
Places, yeah.
Yeah, so some of that is just about access, and, mm-hmm. and I think, and then realizing that some of it is not necessarily handling individual cases, but helping Access to Justice Commission and the self-help folks spread that word about guided interviews that they have online, and that people, you know, in Boyd
that
County.
Anybody can get to the guided interview.
Absolutely.
They're nice enough to show up on Thursdays.
Exactly.
You
but
know?
That would be a start, that people, yeah. you know, and that maybe they could get some filed on their own, or with just a little bit of help from us in addition, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of my students recently put together a do-it-yourself packet for name changes, and we went and gave a presentation at Lexington Pride Center,
yeah.
Along with Legal Aid, saying, look, for the most part, most of y'all, you're adults, you can do this. Here are the two places in which you are going to need help. And the first is that you're going to need to notarize all this stuff. And the second is that if you want to seal it, you're going to need a motion to seal. And then we offered up legal services to help folks do that.
Right.
So, but it doesn't mean that those folks can't do. We've had a number of people show up on the doorstep of the clinic and say, I went to that event and here are all my documents that are done. I heard you have notaries here. Can you help us? And so that, and then also can we do, and then we sign them up and do a motion to seal for them at the end, right?
Yeah.
So they've done half the legal work on their own, really, right? Able to be pro se, and then that frees us up to do twice as many of those because
yeah.
we're just doing the motions to seal. And so I think things like that seem to me that we can do legal education, we can do some DIY stuff, and be thoughtful about how to get that out to folks in other parts of the state where, let's be real, there are rural legal deserts,
yeah.
in the same way that there are rural medical deserts and rural,
yes.
and food deserts and all kinds of environments, rural or otherwise. And so I think part of the benefit of this role is really just getting to spend some time seeing those things and helping other partners be thoughtful about how we can
yes.
help resolve it. And again, if we all go back to, even if I don't resolve it or I'm not a part of that explicit solution and other people are working on that stuff, that's great. What we can do is we're still exposing the students to it.
Yeah.
And so the hope is that when they see those things, then when they graduate, right? Like maybe they want to
yeah.
go work on that stuff. And some of the places, you know, I have found that a number of our students are really inspired by and empowered to do that work because it's where they're from.
Yeah.
So they might be thinking about living in Fayette County or Jefferson County or whatever, somewhere kind of close by to here, but it matters to them to go back.
To yes.
Yeah. And then, you know, clients like, you know, Mr. Buster I mentioned earlier with the truck accident, he's from Monticello.
Yeah.
And he would drive.
That's far.
Yeah. We drove 2.5 hours
yeah.
to go see him a couple of times to
yeah.
yell at his insurance company. And which I'm sure they appreciated. And then, you know, he came up to see us. He would do an appointment at his doctor, right, at UK.
Yeah.
And then he'd
pop over and
see us. So I think that he was not a Zoom guy. We were never gonna
right.
get Mr. Buster to be a Zoom guy. But I do think there's ways for us to be thoughtful about access and resources and capitalizing on some of the lessons we learned during
COVID.
The pandemic.
Yeah. yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
There's got to be some silver linings.
Surely.
These things.
Yes. At least. With access to justice, especially, I think, since Zoom court, at least in Fayette County, hasn't. I mean, not everybody is still doing Zoom court all the time, but
no.
for the things that can, they are.
Yeah. And I think that even if we can't get all the way to, you know, if court is the only thing that we are having to do in person, if we can do most, if not all, of the representation online, through Zoom, through the phone, etc., that is a world of difference for folks.
Yes.
So, like I said, so we, you know, had that meeting with Extension, and they really... They came prep man with a laundry list of stuff that their people and their community communities need.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, it's more than we'll ever be able to do, but it's better to know. And then we can figure out some projects and how to adjust. Absolutely.
And
so
think
again,
about how other places could help and partner in the same kind of way.
Absolutely. And again, if that means they're telling me, they're UK telling other UK, but then I'm out in community meeting with you, meeting with, you know, Sylvie and Glenda and all the folks from Legal Aid and from Apple Red and all of these great organizations, if I can say, hey, I actually just heard from Extension that this is what, in case you didn't know, that information sharing, that pipeline,
yes,
that makes us all better.
Absolutely.
So we don't
absolutely
solve it all, but we do need to know. Then we can work on stuff. We can't work on what we don't know exists.
Thank you for listening to the Logic Podcast. If you ever need an attorney in the Central Kentucky area for any kind of legal matter, please call the Central Kentucky Lawyer Referral Service at 859-225-8644 or check us out on the FCBA website at www.fcba.com. The CKLRS is a public service of the Fayette County Bar Association.